This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
Anyway, thanks again to Jordan Foote for joining us last segment. Sneeze emoji, sneeze emoji, sneeze emoji.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Do you know if energy drinks can expire?
Nah.
They're in a can, unopened, of course.
I mean, at some point, but something tells me not for a while.
I've got a white zero sugar monster.
Yeah, you're good.
And one of those never expire because they're just made of, like...
Monsters.
Alien, don't expire. Alien piss. I don't know. Something radioactive. And I had a can of that highball, which is like an unsweetened, like, energy sparkling water, basically. I found both of those in our office that I realized, I think, were pre-COVID purchases. And so they're both in the fridge now here. And I have...
I think you're fine.
I've got one of the Rooster Booster lights that you so generously brought back from your last Quick Trip trip. But I left my whole bag of stuff here last night after the show, so it's not cold. And so during the break, I said, you know what I'm going to do? We'll get the Jordan Foote in a second. What I think I'm going to do is I'm going to grab my dollar bill that I keep in the drawer in our office for the vending machine. Now, I haven't bought anything in the vending machine.
I owe you a dollar bill, by the way.
You could've...
I keep forgetting to, like, put a dollar bill. Also, I just very rarely actually have a dollar bill.
Totally.
The next time I have a dollar bill, I owe you a dollar bill.
Like, I in no way whatsoever...
It is, like, petty cash. Like, I have taken a dollar bill back there from there before, taken four quarters before, and returned a dollar bill.
Take one, leave one.
It is an honor system, but I do owe you a dollar.
Well, I appreciate your honor there. Because if you were to Venmo me a dollar, I would send it right
back.
It's
no good.
It's no good.
The purpose of that dollar is to be there for the vending machine.
Those dollar bills and those quarters are gold because they're for the vending machine. But I haven't bought anything out of the vending machine in like 3 months because like my favorite thing to buy out of the vending machine was a little bag of cookies that I can only guess has, I don't know, 5,000 carbohydrates. So I just haven't yet. But there's a Diet Dr. Pepper thing in there. I thought, you know what? I don't really want a slightly warm energy drink. I got pretty good energy right now. I just would like a little boost. So, you know what I'll get? Drop my dollar in there, hit 44, get a little Diet Dr. Pepper. Light flashes, says, make another selection. Well, vending machine, the other selections would force me to put a needle into my belly first, and I'd rather not do that.
My options are this Diet Dr. Pepper or death.
Or death. Or worse, the Diet Coke that's also in there. I like Coke Zero, but I'm not a Diet Coke guy. Not yet, at least. Give me time, I guess. I started drinking them whenever they were free, but I'm not willing to pay 60 cents for a Diet Coke. And so, essentially, this has just been me just kind of going through some things here. Well, I'm not going to get my little caffeine boost. Instead, I had a York patty during the break, and I've got some water. I think a recurring bit we may be able to explore in the future, Rudy, is having longer and longer and longer and longer intros before we actually put Jordan Foote on the air here. I do think that we are probably three or four more appearances away from doing an entire segment and going to break again, ultimately just leaving him on hold for 30 minutes.
We have to be 3 minutes and 40 seconds next time.
Okay, our new high score is, you know what, I've got him on hold here for a blazing 420. We'll bring him on that note because that'll be easy to remember. Jordan Foote of Arrowhead Report. You can read his work at arrowheadreport.com, a part of the SI Fan Nation Network. He's a deputy editor there. His boss is a jerk. And you can follow him on Twitter at footnoted and also hear him on the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast, available Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Wherever you get your podcast, just search for Roughing the Kicker. Jordan, what's your most tragic vending machine story?
My most tragic, by the way, I had 525 on my phone by the time, but that's without, you know, answering, saying hi to Rudy,
yeah,
exchanging, like, how's it going, chit chat, being on hold, all that. So, like, really, it was probably about 4 minutes of actual wait time.
420
think.
Is from the exact moment that Rudy put you on hold.
Okay.
To now. So you hit that. You heard that little buzz where you were just sitting there, and your only option was to sit there and listen to the show. That was four minutes and 20 seconds of your life that we just wasted.
Okay, I'll take that. I don't think I have a bad vending machine story. With that said, big fan of the Diet Coke. DC okay. Has never done me wrong. I'm a big, big fan of that, and also. G Fuel's the way to go, man. You guys know this. And I have been trying different flavors. I've been, you know, stocking up when they have BOGO. I found out Amazon has some of the flavors I like. So, A, it's cheaper. B, I get it quicker. C, it's free shipping. Well, I guess if you have Prime, it's not technically free, but whatever. I think G Fuel is the way to go. I've been kind of mixing G Fuels lately. Which,
whoa!
I don't know if that's healthy or safe or not. But, yeah, Diet Coke or G Fuel will usually get me through either way.
I haven't returned to the tub, as they say, since my whole ordeal. It's sugar-free. There's nothing in it that I'm, like, terribly afraid of. I just kind of got off of it for a little while, and today was the first time that I thought, you know what, maybe today I'm going to dip back in. I think my concern is that if I do dip back in, my, like, third sip is going to be... It's going to burn off my eyebrows because I've lost my tolerance to it. I had a great segue that I'll come back to, but first, I would first and foremost like to know your metal stand of G Fuel flavors. Just gun to your head, off the top of your head, right now. We're doing power rankings with Tucker at the top of the next hour. So, your three metal stand G Fuel flavors.
Okay. I've probably only had about six or seven, so my answer is I'm probably missing out. On something. I think Shiny Splash is like blueberry lemonade. That's my number one.
Yeah, it's huge.
Pink Drip, kind of like a bubblegum type flavor. Well, Pink Drip is up there too.
New Boy, also great.
And then I think the third, man, it's called Stonks, and it has the little meme of the Stonks guy.
That's not real.
And it's like a blood orange, which actually turned out to be kind of okay. I was surprised by that. I think really Blue Ice, probably number three, like a nice classic, like slushy at Sonic type flavor. Can't go wrong with those. So I think the theme here, I guess there is no theme. I mean, it's G Fuel. You have different flavors for everything, different names. Stonks, I would highly recommend. I had it warm, and I can't do that. Like you said, the warm energy drink mix, especially when you put water with it. Now, I tell you what. They had this flavor, and it was called Moon Pie.
Yes,
and Moon Pie with water was absolute trash. We tried it one time, and I said this sucks. I mixed it with milk.
Yeah,
and it was great. And they have a strawberry shortcake flavor that I can almost guarantee is horrible with water. The same thing with candy corn. I've tried that; it was bad.
Candy
corn in milk. Was great, and I think strawberry shortcake with milk would also be good. But then if you're paying, you know, $35.99 a tub plus shipping, so you're paying $1 a G Fuel, basically, plus if you have to add milk to it, then you're kind of, you might as well get your sugar-free two-year-old Monster Zero, whatever.
Rudy, you had opinions.
So I've had strawberry shortcake. It sucks.
My
guess and water exclusively.
Yes. Now here's the thing. I don't like milk, so
think about how much milk you'd have to drink. I'm gonna gag.
That's the thing. It's got like a creamy, like a milky taste almost to it. Like if you like milk, my guess is Jordan, you would like it with milk. I do not like milk, so
I don't like milk either.
I don't want milk anywhere near G Fuel, basically. But if you're cool with milk, if you've done that, my guess is you will then like strawberry shortcake with milk. But it's not good with water. I imagine it's the same. It's a hard feeling to describe or taste necessarily, but I imagine it's the same like with the Moon Pie. You just drink and you're like, nope, this is not right.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
That's true.
And it's a flavor that I love.
Yeah.
But it's just, it did, for whatever reason, in a powder with water, just doesn't work.
I'm probably going to have to dip back in soon. Maybe my new move is to go a little bit more diluted because I've been drinking a lot of diet drinks and stuff to try to, you know, just get all that figured out. And I'm looking at the G Fuel website right now. I'm like, ooh, there's a Spider-Man collab with, what's that, radioactive lemonade?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty
interesting.
It's BOGO tonight, I think. Last night.
I'm definitely not buying more. I don't need to buy more. I'm just telling myself I don't need to buy more. I'm sorry, so many still.
There's one called raspberry iced tea.
Oh yeah, I saw that. It's a new one.
That the branding is perfect, and it sounds amazing.
Is it like a weird bunny almost?
Yeah, I think so. Raspberry tea is what I used to get at Slim's.
No.
And it's kind of out of my life now because it's all sugar.
I'm still working my way through the Logic's boysenberry. It's good. I like it.
Let me say this.
Little tip for you, Tucker. What you do is, so I'll leave mine like in the fridge overnight.
This isn't Tucker, but that's fine.
Jordan?
I wasn't going to correct him. I know where I stand in terms of being valued and appreciated and respected on this show.
To be fair to me, I will probably call Tucker Jordan.
You're
the same person to me.
Yeah, we're all the same.
So I leave it in the fridge overnight, but then like an hour before I'm ready to drink it, put it in the freezer. I let it get just a little icy.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it like essentially like a slush, and it is. Yeah, you don't want to get too icy, but you get that nice little slushy action. It's perfect.
Wow, that was a good point, Beard. Nice. I like that.
I deserve that.
Jordan Foot, who's on Twitter at footnoted, and on ArrowheadReport.com. Also inside
the power
Royals.
Rankings.
Nope, that's next segment.
Ah, dang it.
Rudy hasn't had his G Fuel in a while. So that's just sort of this is how we got here. By the way, if either of you guys end up buying
a can right here,
you actually have a can. Wow.
I was struggling today. I was like, and I didn't bring mine with me. I was like, I have to stop by QuickTrip and get a can because I'm struggling.
I don't need any more, but I really am excited about this raspberry iced tea. So I'm going to close the tab right now and come back to it later. But Jordan Foot of Airhead Report, inside the Royals, also at the Ref and the Kicker Chiefs podcast. Jordan, you said earlier that a good G Fuel and a good DC has never let you down. You sound like somebody who didn't watch 3rd and 27 last weekend, am I right?
Man, I...
How sweet would that segue have hit 6 minutes ago?
I don't even know what to say now, really.
Yeah, it sucks. It was bad by me. It was bad by the defense. It was bad all the way around. We can look ahead to the Broncos in a second. But, the question I've been asking all week to everybody is, what is your first thing? What do you look at first whenever you look at what went wrong against the Bengals? Because I think there are legit, like, five or six different totally reasonable answers.
Well, and it's hard for me because I kind of lump a lot of stuff into the overarching umbrella of the Chiefs shot themselves in the foot yet again. Now, if you peel that back, you have Andy Reid making some questionable decisions.
Yep.
You have Spags making the 3rd and 27 decision. You have missed tackles. You have drops. You have the offense only seeing the field three times in the second half. Like in Mahomes' two dropped interceptions, it could have been bad. Like the Chiefs, you can say they shot themselves in the foot, and then you have to explain every single one of those, and it gets kind of depressing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's outside of the Buffalo game and the Tennessee game, when I think that was really a truly different Chiefs team. Like, I don't think that those games mean a ton heading into the playoffs. With that said, the Baltimore game and the Chargers game, they were both close. The Chiefs shot themselves in the foot, still had a chance at the end. So it's one of those things that I truly believe this. There are some talented teams in the AFC. Like, Cincinnati has proven it can drop 30-plus on the Chiefs. The Chargers can do it. The Ravens won't be making the playoffs, but they could probably do it. You know, the Titans, if they get Derrick Henry back, all those teams, Buffalo can do it when they're at their best. The Chiefs are their own biggest obstacle. At this point, it's kind of been the case. When you have such a heavy advantage at quarterback and you have Andy Reid as your head coach, and you have Spags, who generally makes good decisions. He's made some questionable ones, don't get me wrong. The Chiefs, they just need to stay out of their own way in order to get to the Super Bowl and possibly win the Super Bowl. So they shot themselves in the foot, and I think that on a broader scale, that would be the one thing that jumps out.
You mentioned a lot of, like, good teams and good offenses in there who have been able to put up some numbers or have been able to push up against them as they do shoot themselves in the foot. I will get the exact number while you answer the question on the estimate of the number. But I think it was something like 1-4 that our friend Kent Swanson tweeted out, saying that the Chiefs are 1-4 this year against, like, current playoff teams in the AFC. Do you think there's anything there? Because, again, I could clearly build an argument on any number of angles on that one, but I'm genuinely curious where on that you fall.
I think it kind of just reiterates what I've always thought, even when the Chiefs are at their best, is that you can have any given Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday with a COVID delay, like Thursday, it doesn't matter what day, you can show up and not be prepared. You can show up and have somebody get injured. You can show up and have three drop passes turn into interceptions. You can have a coaching mishap or two. Like, there's a reason these teams play. There's a reason that the one seed is so important, I think. It mitigates the risk of playing another game. You get a home game guaranteed. You get to rest, all that good stuff. I just think 1-4 is obviously not ideal. It's not even close to it.
And that is the number, by the way, just to, for the clarification's sake.
Yeah. So if you're kind of going through the AFC playoff field and you rank teams that are like the scariest to the Chiefs, could it be Buffalo? Could it be Tennessee? Could it be Cincy? Could it be the Chargers? Like, there's a case for a lot of those teams. I don't think the Patriots or Colts have that. But if you made that determination for every other team in the AFC, it's not like the Chargers are sitting there, oh, man, I really don't want to play the Bengals, or the Bengals are sitting there, oh, I'd hate to play Tennessee, or Tennessee saying, oh, Buffalo's going to give us trouble. They would all say the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. Like, their fans would say the Chiefs, the media would say the Chiefs. The Chiefs are still, whether it's based on reputation or what they could be, they're number one on those lists for every other team. So I think while the Chiefs are favored, should be favored, have the best likelihood, the best path, per se. I would believe them doing it the most in terms of getting to the Super Bowl. This year has shown you really never know, and it's kind of a probability factor every single year. And the Chiefs, their probability may not be what it once was. But with that said, I think they still, you know, not rest easy, but know that they're that team.
I just clicked over to the Chiefs ESPN page because it's usually what I use to find the schedule or stats or whatever. And the thing at the top was Orlovsky, colon. The Colts are the best built team to beat the Chiefs.
USFL quarterback.
Dan Orlovsky. Get him out of the booth. Get him into the field again. Jordan, if I give you that statement, and I mean, again, you've said this here now. You wrote this, an Arrowhead report. The Chiefs are the biggest threat to the Chiefs are themselves. I'm with you on that. I think that's a good call. But of the AFC field, does one team stand above? And what do you how do you feel about the Colts being the team for that?
Yeah, I could see where the Colts. I kind of lump the Colts and Patriots into the same category. And New England has the defense advantage, but I think the Colts have a slight offensive advantage. Maybe even not so slight. I guess it depends on what version of them shows up. But matchup wise, can they? Those two teams have very high floors. I think like they're not going to have a. And that's even without saying New England has had a couple games like that. The Colts have had a couple games like that. Like a few months ago, I was way more confident in saying this. You don't know what Buffalo is going to do. Right. Like Josh Allen could show up and stink up the joint. You don't know what Tennessee is going to do if they get behind. You don't know what Cincinnati is going to do. Burrow's turnover prone. You aren't certain what the Chargers are going to do, all that stuff. You generally know the Patriots are going to come in. They're going to play elite defense. They're going to have an elite head coach. They're going to have Mac Jones not do a ton. They're going to run the ball. They're going to try to not turn the ball over. That formula wins a lot of games. You have the Colts. The Colts are going to run the ball with Jonathan Taylor. They're going to have Carson Wentz not make mistakes, which I didn't think I'd ever find myself saying again. He's surprisingly been solid this year, and good Carson Wentz is still, I think, decent. Defensively, they're well-built. I think in the trenches, they're well-built. So those teams, if they get out to a 17-3 lead or a 21-7 lead or a 14-0 lead, that's when the Chiefs would definitely, I think, have to worry and say they can dominate time of possession. I know we're both on the same page in terms of time of possession, but with context, if they dominate it and get up to a lead, right, that definitely plays. If they are converting some touchdowns instead of field goals, I mean, it's a lot of what ifs. On the flip side, Colts get down on the opposite end of that, you know, 14-0, 17-3. They're not built to come back. You can't run back into the game. I think Tennessee, I don't trust Tannehill. They're kind of in that boat as well. But I think they're so top-heavy that they won't really find themselves in that spot. The Patriots, Mac Jones isn't going to lead you back into a game, at least not right now. You know, he's a rookie. He's just not going to do it. So those two teams specifically, they're, I don't want to say front runners because that's just kind of a rude term to say for a really good NFL team. But with that said, if the Chiefs, you know, take care of business and start off hot, I don't think either of those teams are built to come back and really have a shot in those games.
I was preparing a fun thing to talk about from the Bengals game and the idea of keeping the Chiefs off the field and all of that, and how that's largely like been disproven, and how, you know, time of possession is not a very rich stat, right? But I do think there's something interesting to be learned from the Bengals game, and you see what happens when the Chiefs get three possessions in the second half and only have 3 points to show for it. Like, I think there's some interesting lessons about being more aggressive when you do have the ball and not taking your foot off the gas and maybe taking risks to keep the ball in your hands, all of those things. That's where I was going to go. But I would like to tell you something hilarious. The Chiefs won the time of possession battle against the Bengals.
So they won.
They was 30-54 to 29-06.
Got a W last week.
That is shocking to me.
Won the game, right?
Still the one seed, in my opinion.
Super Bowl champs.
I wonder who won in the Super Bowl. I should go back and check. That feels like something that my brand would really benefit from doing, but I haven't done in a while. So I guess with that being said, that just is flabbergasting and hilarious to me. But do you think there is something to be learned from that Bengals game, as it's theoretically, not to put the cart before the Bronco here, but theoretically the last meaningful close game the Chiefs should play before they have to go play another good playoff team eventually. Is there something to be learned from that, or do you like that Bengals game as a weird sort of one-off outside of the self-inflicted wounds and all of that?
No, I think it's good to get those things out of the way now, and not have, you know, a blowout game against the Bengals and then have that false confidence. I mean, they're always going to be a good team that can come back in games. Like, Burrow's excellent. The wide receivers are great. I'm not going to say the T. Higgins thing that we always talk about. but, you know, the Chiefs, hearing the comments from Spags about how really they're not going to change up too much, and he's going to tell them to maybe lay off the aggressiveness just a tad in certain situations, but still be that team. Then the the defense of the third, as you tweet, LOL, about the time of possession. Well, I just saw that. I had my tweet deck pulled up, trying to keep it together here.
No, you don't. It's my fault. It's my fault that we're here. I'm just floored by it. It's just shocking.
It's just your brand now. You have to keep that up. I think sometimes people think that you're the analytics guy, even though, like, you're not the analytics guy. But
I'm not that smart.
Also, you're definitely aware of stuff like that. Which
I think, I find comedy in Mark Schlereth saying he doesn't know what air yards are.
I tweeted. Yeah. That was brutal.
The Chiefs also ran the ball more often and more effectively than the Bengals by a significant margin.
And they won.
Didn't they like almost triple them in rushing yards on Saturday or Sunday? It was pretty close.
115-60. Yeah, pretty close.
Okay.
6.7 yards per carry to the Bengals 3.2. It's a good effort there.
Yeah. But back to
Spags. Yeah, that's my fault.
No, it's my fault too. But
good
just
teammate.
Hearing, and we kind of knew this about the Chiefs, which is why it's about mitigating like mistakes and risks. Andy Reid's always kind of been, I hate using the word stubborn because it has like a negative connotation, but stubborn, Spags, same way. They're going to do their brand of football. They're going to do things their way. They're going to teach their way. It's one of those things where we've seen the Chiefs offense play New England in a playoff game, have a terrible first half and adjust. I feel a lot more comfortable with Andy Reid being able to do that and be able to, you know, say we're struggling, let's get it together. Which I don't want to say I'm extremely confident in the Chiefs offense not having a bad half in the playoffs, but I think now with Mahomes seeing the things he's seen and being able to run the ball somewhat effectively, and Travis Kelce hopefully getting a little bit healthier, the same with Tyreek Hill, they have enough to skate by and do some damage. Defensively, clearly, Ja'Marr Chase just abusing poor Charvarius Ward, who has had a good year in a contract season. No adjustments that I could tell. Like, he didn't go to any sort of bracket and say, Ward, you're going to press at the line of scrimmage and then kind of trail Chase and have, whether it's Sorensen or Thornhill or Matthew, up over the top to cover inside and kind of take away that verticality element. Part of that's on the players. You know, they have to be able to tackle. They have to be able to know when and when not to be handsy and stuff like that as defensive backs. As you add to your thread.
Boy, these tweets are going out fast. They didn't even load on my page until you said that.
Add to your thread the Darrell Williams 6.3. He had a good game, by the way.
Nice, yeah.
That's another conversation in and of itself. But back to the point at hand again, the Chiefs are a stubborn team. It's gotten them a Super Bowl before. It's an adjustment game, though. So when things aren't going right, something's got to give. And if the Chiefs play the Chargers and Mike Williams has one of his Mike Williams games against the Chiefs, or T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase have a big game, or Stephon Diggs is carving them up, something's got to give. I'm more worried about the defense, ironically, and it's been so good over the past several months or 3 months, I guess. So I'm not genuinely worried about either unit, but if things go south, the Chiefs are not absolutely guaranteed to dig themselves out of a hole.
Tell me something you've learned about the Broncos this week or that you're looking for on Saturday. Not Sunday, Saturday.
Something I learned about the Broncos. I chatted with Zach Kelberman of Mile High Huddle.
Did you? On Roughing the Kicker?
Yeah, great conversation. So you can check that out on the Roughing the Kicker podcast. It was great. Zach, really nice guy, really good content. We kind of just chatted about how Vic Fangio kind of needs to go, like the writing's on the wall. George Payton should know that. Drew Lock, we chatted about Drew Lock more than I intended to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of pro Drew Lock. I think he could be an average quarterback or so somewhere else, but this is it for him. Like, I don't see him coming back to Denver. They're not even, I don't want to say dumb, but ignorant enough, I suppose, to keep coming back to this, especially when Fangio obviously doesn't like him. So I learned a lot more from an inside perspective about the Fangio thing. This has run its course, I think. It's not like the players are openly saying it, but the offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur, he's done. I think Fangio's done. The Broncos, their priority list is going to be like head coach and coordinator, and then finding something to do at quarterback.
It'll be interesting because Teddy Bridgewater's on IR now, so Drew Lock should get the start on Saturday. And, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating because I think that conventional wisdom is that they have a pretty good roster for the most part, but is that going to make it worth coming to the AFC West for Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson? Are those guys going to move at all? Who is the head coach going to be to that point? Could Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson bring their own head coach? Like that, it could be a wild offseason in Denver. I'm not sure it's ultimately going to matter because I think it's going to be very, very, very hard to step over the Chiefs and the Chargers, but it could be really interesting.
Well, they could also have tuition-free and debt-free college at the USFL.
Yes.
And do that and play under Todd Haley in a schedule that starts mid-April,
yes,
right in the middle of the NFL offseason. So,
you said Drew Lock's done in Denver. Drew Lock deserves to be a Tampa Bay Bandit with Todd Haley. He'd be perfect.
Oh, man. Him and Todd, I feel like they'd hit it off.
Do you have a quarterback? Rudy and I went through and did this. I don't know if you heard it. If not, I'll reiterate for anyone who wasn't listening then, because that was like an hour ago. Gardner Minshew is too good, but he would be a hilarious Tampa Bay Bandit under Todd Haley. Johnny Manziel, maybe out of football too long, but that would be awesome. And then Jake Fromm was Rudy's, I think, most sort of sincere
that
choice.
Jake Fromm and Nathan Peterman.
Both strong. I think Josh Rosen really needs to get back out on a football field, and I feel like Todd Haley could be the guy to bring that out of him.
That then also reminded me a guy who I think is close to that is Felipe Franks.
So we have stalled for you and given you some examples, Jordan. Do you have a quarterback in mind and think, you know what, this guy needs Todd Haley and Todd Haley needs this guy?
Well, I had two. One of them was, believe it or not, Josh Rosen.
Excellent.
I think that guy needs to like be out on a football field,
yes,
like put tape out there pretty much and just get someone to – like, watch him play football.
Yes.
Considering, like, how high of a profile guy he was, and, you know, there have been rumors about him, like, not being a natural leader or whatever. Like, at this point, with so many years in, I think Drew Lock might fall down this path, too. Teams give up on quarterbacks after a while. I think Cam Newton would be interesting, which it would never, ever, ever happen.
Because well?
He won't even be a backup in the NFL. I don't think he could accept that, and I don't necessarily
maybe he just gets bored.
Say that I blame him. Like,
yeah.
As a big Cam Newton guy, he just isn't good anymore. Like, he, his arm is shot.
But is he USFL good?
But him and Todd Haley would be must-watch football. Like, oh. I would almost pay a
yes.
subscription fee
yes.
every week. I think they have, like, a 10-week season in the playoffs, yep. so I would sign up for a 3-month Cam Newton package for $9.99 a month. I'd pay for that.
I love that. You're talking earlier and saying that eventually there's going if the Spring Football League eventually catches, at some point some older quarterback is going to go play to prove that he's got a little more juice in the tank. Cam is a young old quarterback, right? And like, I feel like you want to be Superman again. Go play in the USFL. I would. Those jerseys would sell like hotcakes. Why is that the thing we say sells?
Big Ben, Todd Haley reunion. Didn't it end really bad with them?
Yes.
Like, I don't think Ben
likes
him at all.
I'm
a Pittsburgh
99%
team.
Confident that Ben Roethlisberger had somebody push Todd Haley downstairs like twice. But this is where I was getting to. What I want to, Josh started kind of tease it. What
yes.
I really want to happen, it will not happen, I'm sure, but what I want to happen is I want to see general manager, head coach, starting quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger,
ooh.
Lead the Pittsburgh Maulers. Because here's the thing. You're not getting Big Ben to come do this for just the starting quarterback. He doesn't need that. He's been a starting quarterback in the NFL. The man's won Super Bowls. You know what he hasn't done? He's been a head coach and a GM and your starting quarterback. You got to challenge him.
And who wouldn't watch that?
I would.
I sure would.
And then it would be real funny when they play Tampa Bay and Todd Haley weirdly falls down a set of stairs before the game.
Oh, my. How old are the former – they've got to be old. I was going to say, how old is Tyler Thigpen? He's got to be 40, right?
Rudy loves to. Don't get Rudy started. Go ahead.
I firmly stand by the belief that if Tyler Thigpen was in today's NFL, he would solidify his spot as, like, the 15th best quarterback in the league.
He's 37.
Tyler Thigpen was meant for today's NFL.
You guys want to feel
I'm
old?
I'm more of a Brody Croyle guy myself.
He's 38, Jordan.
I'm also all right with Brody Croyle.
That's what I was about to say. Do you want to feel old? Brody Croyle is 38.
No way.
38.
He can still play in the USFL.
Aaron Rodgers 38 or 37?
I think, oh boy, I love this game. I love playing Byron Pringle is older than Josh Gordon or whatever the game is, ultimately.
Sammy Watkins.
No, Sammy Watkins, that's
he's
it.
Close.
That's it. No, it's Byron Pringle and Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers' age.
I think he's 37, or he just turned 38.
He turned 38 in December. Brody Croyle, Brody Croyle is older than Aaron Rodgers.
How old's Big Ben? 39? He's got to be older than Aaron Rodgers by at least a year or two. I don't think he's 40, though.
Do we think Philip Rivers might get involved with the USFL?
Whoa!
Maybe he does. I'm not saying he's going to play quarterback.
Just put a team in his backyard.
The man's coach in high school. Maybe he wants to go.
He already has the roster for it.
Maybe it's to step up.
Yeah, he's
He's got the team.
Jordan makes a point here. Yes.
The very least,
he's
got a bunch of
mascots. He's quarterbacking and GMing. He can sign his own kids.
Yeah.
Get him free tuition.
He's got enough for a whole 11-man roster.
He really does. Ben Roethlisberger is 39.
Free tuition.
Okay. Brett Favre. Wow. Oh, he's got to be. He's way like 53. He's got to be 50, right?
I think so. I think he's 50 something.
And
52.
He won't come out of retirement for that. He'd only come out of retirement for like. The Colts of Carson Wentz's COVID thing didn't work out or whatever.
Is Tyrod Taylor going to end up in the USFL?
I can see that.
It feels close.
I think he's too
like
good.
That.
I think he's gonna have a career
he
where
was
he is
good, and then his lungs got punctured.
Yeah, great. Bonkers.
Johnny would be fun. Johnny Manziel was a good one, but I think he has like openly tweeted several times that he's kind of. I think he's trying to be a pro golfer now, actually. Which there is golf going on. PGA Tour season has started. I know this isn't a golf show, but we need to get Josh out on the course. And Rudy, I don't know if you golf. We need to get you out there, too.
I golf about once a decade.
I'm still at my
under on
that.
So have you golfed last decade?
I have golfed in the last year.
That was at your 2021, unfortunately, your 20s of golfing has been?
It was last June, July, August, Somewhere last summer.
How old will you guys be in 2030?
I'll be 17.
I'll be dead. You mean the year 2030 or in the 2030s?
No, in the year 2030.
Yeah,
I hope I'm not dead by then. I'd like to make it.
Josh will be over 30, won't he?
Yeah, dude, that's not that far away, man. I just turned 27 like a week ago.
Oh, man, I turned 23 in a couple weeks, and I feel like it's almost
all right, so that's Jordan Foote. I put it ahead and put him on hold. That's Jordan Foote of ArrowheadReport.com. It's really not important how young he is. It doesn't make me second-guess kind of where I'm at, generally speaking, in my sort of space on this mortal coil. You can follow him on Twitter, at Footnoted, where eventually he'll dance on all of our graves.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
We're a buffet today.
Yes, that's a great call.
And we are absolutely shoving it down your throat.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Jordan Foote for joining us. You really should follow him on Twitter at Footnoted. I was going to give him a hard time about him tweeting that he's got... Just tweeted, I think it was some eye emojis or something along those lines. If you want to find out what that's about, you should follow him on Twitter at FOOTENOTED. And you can read his work at arrowheadreport.com and check out Roughing the Kicker Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts. And then, I don't know, find out whatever happens next. Are we doing two segments here, Rudy? I should have asked you this during the break. We were talking about other stuff, you know? What do you have it set up for right now?
I have it set up for two more. Like
that's great.
Break.
Let's do that. No, let's do that. Because there are a couple things that Jordan mentioned earlier in that segment, the Chief stuff, not the G Fuel stuff, believe it or not, that I thought was kind of interesting. Going back to the stat from Kent, I wanted to get it exactly right, saying the Chiefs are 1-4 against the current AFC playoff field. So I tweeted it at the time, and I ultimately didn't love where the whole discussion went, because I think you can pretty much chop and screw that however you want. I think it's interesting because the Chiefs' like list of quality wins is a lot shorter than their loss than their list of like quality losses, if you will. And again, this is not me like leading up to some grand takeaway. I'm going to spoil it on the front end here. I'm not saying the Chiefs are 1-4 against AFC playoff teams right now. Therefore, they actually stink and will lose in the first round of the playoffs. I don't believe that. What I believe is that they should be regarded as the scariest team in the AFC and the favorite in the AFC. But that doesn't make that stat not true anymore. Maybe it's not important or it's not good enough. So I think you can rationalize it out pretty well, right? That Ravens game changed on a fumble at the end. That Chargers game was back and forth, two good teams going at it. That Bills game was a bludgeoning. The Titans game was a bludgeoning. But both of those seems a little bit like a version of the Chiefs that we don't really currently see right now. The turnovers, the self-inflicted wounds, etc.
They were in the middle kind of refinding themselves, right? Like rediscovering who they are as a team. Like the way the Chiefs are playing right now is kind of how they were trying to play at the beginning of the year, but while still working out the kinks of it, right? Like the Chiefs are having a lot of these methodical drives where it's not just big plays. They struggle with that early in the year, right? Travis Kelce would drop a ball.
Right.
Doesn't happen often. Tyreek Hill would drop a ball. Doesn't happen often. Clyde fumbles. Doesn't happen often.
And that's 100% fair. And also, some of those things popped up again against the Bengals.
Yep.
I think that's the part of it that makes me go, huh.
Yeah. Because if they beat the Bengals, you can completely chalk up the early losses to football's weird. Yep. You have these stretches sometimes where you just don't play good.
Drops, right? Like, turnovers, again, picks.
Players who don't normally drop the ball are dropping the ball. Yep. There's some bad luck involved. Yada, yada, yada. You can chalk that up. And the Bengals won, and then again, then you lose the Bengals. Now, where the Bengals won, at least to me, feels different. I don't know about you. I did not feel like the Bengals necessarily were better than the Chiefs or play better than the Chiefs. It just felt like Jamar Chase
was better than the Chiefs. Yeah.
Right? There was some of that. Now, at the end of the day, it's a loss. At the end of the day, they failed to adjust to a great player.
Mm-hmm.
And that great player made plays. And generally, you know who you see in the playoffs? You see great players.
Yeah.
Like, the great players are generally in the playoffs. You're going to and Jamar Chase is a little bit of an anomaly. There are other receivers. Like, not a lot of receivers who are big and fast like him.
Sure.
Not a lot of those guys. But there are other great players in the playoffs. It did feel, though, unlike maybe some of those early games where you just were overmatched at times,
mm-hmm.
like in multiple aspects. It really just felt like one guy was just, I mean, one guy won you a game almost, which doesn't right. happen often in the NFL. Unless you're a quarterback, obviously.
Even then, it's hard for a quarterback to do it, but it's impossible for a position player. Absolutely. It's also interesting that neither team had or forced a turnover in that game. Again, that doesn't fit the sort of cycle of the Chiefs' earlier losses. But I think about the Tyreek Hill bobble to punch out at the end of the first half, and I think about Travis Kelce dropping a pass that could have moved the chains there instead of ultimately having one of those second-half drives fizzle out.
The Tyreek one really hurts because that game comes down to Ja'Marr Chase. Oh. Made plays for them.
Mm-hmm.
And your elite receiver, not just that time, had chances to make plays a couple of times throughout that game.
Yep.
And he failed to make plays.
Yep.
And a lot of times football can be a very complicated sport, and sometimes it can be as simple as this guy made plays, mm-hmm. this guy didn't make plays, and that's how the game goes, right?
And I think that if I had to have a takeaway on the losses to good teams front, which again, I think my inclination is to say that it's a little bit more about randomness than it is about any continuing thread the whole way through. But if I had to have something sort of like a takeaway, it would be that we should not underestimate the fact that good teams can punish the Chiefs for even smaller mistakes that they made.
This team is not as invincible as the last 2 years felt, right?
Or even as the last 6 or 7 weeks have felt.
Yeah.
Because they were better in these games, but it's easier to make mistakes and still get away from the Giants, Jordan Love's Packers, the Raiders twice. The Cowboys is a quality victory. They've had a weird stretch also. The Cowboys are going to look at that stretch and go, that was whenever Amari Cooper was out with COVID and CeeDee Lamb got concussed at halftime. The Broncos, and then the Chargers, that's a quality win. You split with those teams, and then you beat the Steelers, who have had all of their issues. I don't think that this means something bigger than, that's kind of interesting, other than perhaps, to the phrase you used, Rudy, of like, this team is not invincible or impenetrable. And I do wonder if maybe if there was a little bit of a thicker skin built up from fans over this winning streak where they had, I would say, like 2 wins over legitimately good teams in their forms there being the Cowboys and the Chargers, and then wins against teams that go between pretty good to stinky. I think you have to account for that. I think it's something worth noticing, not worth pulling your hair out and losing sleep over.
They don't quite have the margin of error that they've had really just like in 2019 right. and 2020, right?
Right.
They had their margin of error was much greater in those 2 years than it was this year. And it's still like the Chiefs can still make mistakes and win because they're, at the end of the day, it's Patrick Mahomes, right?
Yep.
The problem is, and this is, it's what happened in the Cincinnati game. You made a lot of mistakes. And unfortunately, those mistakes led to Patrick Mahomes sitting on the sideline for the last 6.5 minutes of the game.
Yep.
And that's the thing that you can't have.
And when he was on the field, it wasn't productive because of other mistakes, either coaching or execution.
You've got to make sure, regardless of what happens, right, that whatever your margin of error is, it ultimately results in him having a chance.
I want to take you to the bizarro world, NFL. I'll bring you that whenever we come back.
This is Almost Entirely Sports with Joshua Briscoe.
I did not have in the show notes talk about how clean Rudy's butt was all pandemic, but here we are.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
That's an unpleasant one.
I always had toilet paper.
Proud of you, man.
Shouts to the Hy-Vee 151st and Black Bob. Always did me well.
This is a stat I saw, or a graphic I saw right at the end of the show yesterday that I wanted to mention at some point today. Maybe we'll get more mileage out of this later. I don't know. Maybe we won't, but I think it's kind of interesting. It's from Brian Knowles on Twitter. He said, meanwhile, in a universe not too far from our own, here are the current NFL standings if every single one-score game had the opposite result. I think that's kind of fun because we look at one-score games a lot as like a measure of, you know, how so many. We talked about a bunch of them for the Chiefs. But they lost some one-score games that very easily they could have won. But how do you account for one-score games that maybe your team should have lost? This just flips all of them. So this is statistically not going to necessarily help or hurt teams that have a lot of games like that. So the Chiefs with the adjusted win-loss here would be 10-6, as opposed to being 11-5 right now. The Titans, also 11-5, if you flipped other one-score games, though, which I think is kind of interesting, drop all the way to 8-8. The Titans are a 500 football team if they lose the one-score games that they won and if they win the one-score games that they lost, which is showing you that they have had good luck, I would argue, in one-score games. Again, this isn't terribly prescriptive, but I think it's kind of interesting. The Broncos have become 10-6. They've had poor luck in close games. There are two, though, that really leap out at me.
It does really make sense with the Broncos. Good defense, mediocre quarterbacks. Yeah. Feels like you lose a lot of one-score games in that situation.
I think you're right. A couple other ones, I guess, before I get to my real favorites. The Panthers and Packers would both be 9-7 in this flipped world, where the Niners would jump to 10-6. The Seahawks would be 9-7. The Texans would be 7-9. The Raiders would drop to 5-11. But there are two, one at the top and one at the bottom, of one in one conference, one in the other, that are really interesting. One, that the Philadelphia Eagles would jump to 11-5. Right now they're 9-7. It's just two more games, which isn't crazy. But I just don't think that they're getting a ton of respect. It seems like they're a fraudulent 9-7, when in reality they might be a sort of fraudulent 11-5 if they had good luck.
They're playing much different the second half of this season.
Definitely.
Than the first half. They have looked good. Jalen Hurts is looking good.
If you watch an Eagles playoff game, it will not remind you necessarily of the team that you saw when the Chiefs played them back in week, I think, 3. But here's the other one that's funny to me. Because people were tweeting this during Chiefs-Steelers, talking about it afterwards, rightfully so. They went, holy bleep, how is this team 500? The reason, the way the Steelers are 500 is because of close games. Because if you flip the result of every one-score game the Steelers were in, they would drop to 3-12-1, which would be the worst record in the AFC. If you just flipped the most random close games on their head, they beat the Bills in a one-score game early in the year. They beat the Seahawks in a one-score game. The Browns in a one-score game. They tied with the freaking Lions. The Ravens was a one-score win. The Titans was a one-score win. Their only multiple-score victories were against the Broncos and the Browns. Oh, but they would have gotten one back, though, because they lost a one-score game.
Good.
He is very good. Just not good enough to also play quarterback. Again, none of that is like life-changing NFL stuff, but it's kind of a fun little exercise. And any time I have a chance to tell you that the Steelers are actually not good, I'm going to do it. Tucker is next.